Hello and thanks once again for taking the time to download and listen to a podcast on CelticUnderground.net. I'm Harry Brady and this is podcast number 238. The officials have been paid and the wonder goal is scored and the Inter Milan game is over. So unlike last week where we had a fresh from the match report, and if you want one of them, you can go to at Buy Them In Celtics podcast to listen to myself, Lawrence and Remy talking about the game and our thoughts. This week we have St Anthony once again joining us with former Celtic player Andy Lynch. Andy started as a winger, then moved to left back at Celtic, scoring some crucial penalty goals. Before we get on to the podcast, time for some public service announcements. First up, we have the Celtic Grave Society and one of their first known match day events this Saturday, 28th February at 12 noon in Kilsyth Cemetery to commemorate Andy McAtee, who played from Celtic to 1910 to 1924. Speakers on the day will be Lisbon Lion Jim Craig, Tom Boyd, two Mr. Celtics there with Craig and Boyd, along with Celtic author David Potter and Tony McAtee, who will speak on behalf of the family. From the cemetery, they will be moving on to the Curling Stone in Kilsyth. Not quite sure where it is, so if you're from the area, you can go. You'll know. If not, I'm sure Google will be able to tell you. And I'm sure you can just follow the people who will be going from the event. And they expect to be in the Curling Stone at 1 o'clock for the Q&A with Boyd, Craig, etc. We also have more forthcoming events from the Celtic FC Foundation. I think there's a few last few places left for the Zipwire, 5 or 6 or something like that, and 1 or 2 team places left for the golf. I think the Zipwire's £125 minimum spend and the golf is £400, goodness, £400 for a team of 4. But if golf or jumping off Celtic Park's upper tier's not your thing, then the next event that the Foundation have launched is the 2015 Ben Nevis Huddle, which follows on from the 2013 and 14 ones where there was a huddle done at the top of Ben Nevis. The first one, 108 people did it, and then the second one, 150 people did it up at the top of Britain's highest mountain, performing a huddle at 4,408 feet in the snow in June. Yes, you do need to wrap up for this. Celtic raised over, and the fans raised over £45,000 for the foundation in those two ones, and Tom Boyd supported it in the last 2 years, and I think Hoopy the Huddle Hound will be at the top of the huddle this year. This year's huddle will take place on Saturday, June the 13th, and participants will start the climb from the Glen Nevis Visitor Centre following the mountain track route. And again, Tom Boyd's already, Mr. Celtic, as I said earlier, has already signed up to participate. So there's the Ben Nevis, the Zipwire, the golf, and Celtic FC Foundation will also be participating in this year's Kilt Walk. And if you want any more information, go on to www.celticfcfoundation.com or email cfcfoundation@celticfc.co.uk, telephone 0141 551 4321. If you want to know more about the Celtic Graves event, I think there was a piece on the club's website this week, but also the Celtic Graves Twitter is pretty easy to find at Celtic Graves. Anyway, enough of me and all these public service announcements. This is him, St Anthony, with him, Andy Lynch.
It's my pleasure now to be joined by Andy Lynch. Andy was a popular Celtic player for 7 years between 1973 and 1980, and we're going to have a wee chat about his career and have a wee walk down memory lane. But as always in the podcast, Andy, we always ask whoever we've got on, what was the first Celtic game you attended and who was your first Celtic hero?
Well, I can't remember the exact first game, but one of the first games was against Celtic against Aberdeen at Celtic Park. And I remember my dad took me there, and I might have been 8, 9, 10, something like that, maybe younger. But I remembered the snow, it was snowing, and the ground was pretty icy, and it was touch and go whether the game would go on. And I remember John Hughes, Yogi. At that time, all the talk was that all the players wore the normal football boots, but he had a pair of sort of flat shoe, sand shoe type. He had that on, and he got better grip than all the rest, and he ran riot, and he scored 5 goals. And that was, I think, they beat Aberdeen something like 8-1 or something like that, 8-0. So John Hughes sticks out my mind. I've obviously met him a few times since then, but he sticks out my mind as one of the earliest players that I remember. And also in that team, McNamee, John Divers, players of that ilk. That's my early memories.
So who would have been your favourite player of the period then, when you were a boy?
Well, I suppose it would probably have been the next team that came through, the next decade of players that started coming through. To be honest with you, it would probably be the Lisbon Lions, because I was just about, 15, something like that, when they were at their prime. And ironically, you know, obviously you're thinking about Jimmy Johnson, you're thinking about Billy McNeil and players of that ilk. And just a few years later, I'm training and playing with them. So it was, I thought round about the Lisbon Lion era, that was players that I thought were wonderful, wonderful.
So your big break came with Hearts when you were a youngster. So how did the move to Tynecastle come about?
Well, the move to Tynecastle came about, I was playing played with Renfrew Juniors, and then I left there. I wasn't enjoying it that much, and I went back for a couple of months playing amateur football, and then Rob Roy asked me to come for a trial. I wasn't really bothered. I was thinking that, I think it was at Renfrew, it was a bit tight and stuff like that, and as a left winger, I just didn't enjoy it as much. Went to Rob Roy, big wide field, like a bowling green. Loved it, and within a few games, there was quite a lot of scouts coming round, and I was getting offers to go here, there and everywhere. And the chief scout of Hearts spoke to me after one of the games, and he was very persuasive. He said that the Hearts had a very strong team in the one position that they've not got a natural left winger. Mm-hmm. He said that if I did sign for Hearts, he said he would guarantee, well, more or less guarantee me that if things worked out, I would get an opportunity to get first team football fairly quickly. So true to the word.
So who would have been the manager then at Tynecastle?
The manager then was John Harvey. He was an older gentleman, the old school. At one time he was the trainer of Scotland, and he was basically the manager, a gentleman, that type of thing. And I went through and I played a reserve game, and then I met with him in the boardroom after the game, and he was very persuasive, and he said, well, I know all about you. He said, you just keep that going, and before you know it, you'll be in this first team. So that made a lot of sense to me, and I thought, well, this could be a great opportunity for me to get first team football quickly. And I only played about 4 reserve games, and then I made my debut.
So the Hearts team at that time would have been the likes of Jim Cruikshank, Alan Anderson, Donald Ford, were all great players, great Scottish players of the period.
Yep, there was a very strong team, as you mentioned, Cruikshank, the goalkeeper, and Eddie Thompson, Jim Townsend, midfield player, he was a great player. You meant Donald Ford, Rennie Moller, there was...
We had a couple of foreign guys there.
Yeah, Roel Jensen Rennie Moller. So it was a very strong team, and it was great. For me, I just fitted in there very easily. Now, at that time, Joe Wallace had come to Tynecastle, I think, or he was just about to come to Tynecastle, and he took over as first-team coach. So he more and more took more and more power to run the team, and he got great results as well.
How did you find Wallace as a man? Is his reputation sort of goes before him for being a motivator and a
fantastic? He was absolutely fantastic. He was he just, you know, he had us. I think he came in round about October or something, And for the rest of the season, I think we lost only about 2-3 games, mm-hmm. including playing the Old Firm and stuff like that. But a great motivator. He knew the game well. His training was very hard. And he was a great guy to play for. And I know there's been a lot said about him over the years and whatever. But, you know, maybe being a wee bit of a bigot and what have you. But I don't agree with that, because mm-hmm. we played against Celtic Rangers a lot, and he was always having a joke about whoever we're playing. And mm-hmm. he was, and then on the day that, or when he was leaving, and he got offered the Ibrox post by Willie Waddle, I wanted to thank him, and I didn't know how to do it. I was still a young boy, maybe about 20 odds. And my dad says, look, just go up, thank him for you know, giving you good advice, stuff like that, and wish him well in his new job. Mm-hmm. So I did just that. And we were in the dressing room at the time, and I sort of said it quietly, so I didn't want anybody to hear it, you know, that type of thing. But all the players were getting dressed, getting ready and stuff like that. And he bellowed out, he just went, Lynchy, it's a pity you and Townie, that's Jim Townsend, mm-hmm. were a couple of Tims, he says, because you two would be coming to Ibrox with me.
That way,
yeah. Yeah, that's what he said.
That's quite a compliment coming
from. Yeah, it is. Uh-huh. So I met him, obviously, our paths crossed quite a bit after mm-hmm. that with the Celtic Rangers thing. But he was always, he'd just come right over to you. And I remember it was some do with the football thing. And I was captain of Celtic that particular time. He came up and he just lifted me up and gave me a big bear hug. Mm. But he was that type of man. So, mm-hmm. But he was a great coach, I must say.
Mm-hmm. So the Hearts team of that period, I remember one of the first games that I got taken to my dad. Hearts played like the Ajax strip.
Yes.
Remember, it was really unusual, quite modern, and I think they only had it for maybe a year or two. But I certainly remember that. So you did well with Hearts. You certainly, there was stories about Celtic coming in for you even before you signed. There's always a rumour that the Jocks team fancied you out in the left wing. But did you play in the 7-0 game that they get beat?
No, well, actually, I think I was one of the subs because I'd already asked for a transfer.
Mm-hmm.
And Joe, as I was mentioning, Joe Wallace, after he left, I think I had about 2 years under him, Bobby Seath came in. And he was the man, and the club just was falling apart. So I wasn't playing. I didn't start that mm-hmm. game. But I think a lot of that was to do a lot of the. I know that a lot of my teammates at Hearts were disillusioned, and a lot of them were looking to move.
Mm-hmm.
You know, same as myself. I was also. I'd asked for a transfer. I felt it was time for me to move on.
Mm. And did anybody come in for you? Did you have any knowledge of anybody coming in at that time? Or players tended to be kept in the dark in these things in the days, don't they?
Certainly were, but I did also know that Celtic were interested, mm-hmm. you know. And without giving too much away, I was just told to sit tight and, you know,
bide your time.
Bide my time, but it was getting into months, you know. We were getting into months, and I was getting very frustrated at Tynecastle. I did have some offers of the English First Division then, what it was, but there's only one team I wanted to go to, and when I found out that they wanted me to go to Celtic Park, then I just hung in there, you know. Mm-hmm. But it was getting frustrating because it was going into maybe 3, 4, 5 months, and you begin to wonder, it's a short career.
Yeah, well, definitely.
You know, mm-hmm. and then I was thinking, well, what am I going to do here? And then what I did do, I pushed the boat a wee bit because... I went in and handed in a transfer. That's what a transfer request at Tynecastle, and that's what spurred Celtic to come on.
Mm-hmm.
And then I get signed there.
Mm. Yeah. So Lou McCarry left Celtic in late January, and Celtic got a big transfer fee at that time. And within a matter of weeks, Ali Hunter had arrived, and then you'd arrived. And shortly after you arrived, Stevie Murray had arrived. So I think McCarry was. I don't think Jock's team would have been worried that losing McCarry when he deletion Deans and Hood and McCarry and Lennox and players like that there. But what he was obviously looking for was something different, especially with Hunter coming in as a goalkeeper. But you were interesting because Jock's team had never played with an orthodox left winger. And then you arrived and this was going to be something different, because up until then it had either been Big John or Bobby Lennox, who were essentially right-footed players.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, at that point, I remember my dad saying, you know, that this is quite
an unusual
signing, because Big Jock signed a guy who's going to play in the left wing.
Yeah.
So when you joined, you must have had... what was your first impression?
Well, what you're talking about there is the left wing. I mean... I obviously got the opportunity to play against Celtic and Rangers quite a bit as a left winger, and I think I did fairly well. And I would imagine that if Big Joke was looking to boost his team, he would prefer left-sided players to be left-footed.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it makes sense, you know. I didn't realise about these other players that get signed at the same time as me. I mean, that's new to me. I forgot all about that. Stevie Murray, of course, he was a terrific player. I don't know if the fans... He was one of these players that I'm not sure the fans totally appreciated, which is the case quite a lot with the way fans look at, you know, they've got their favourite players. But he was a great player. Unfortunately, he had a bad foot injury. And that put paid to his career.
Mm.
But he actually played in the first cup final that I played in. That was the Airdrie Cup final, 1975.
Mm-hmm.
Stevie Murray, and Ali Hunter. I didn't realise that he came around about the same time. Yeah.
So your debut was a notable game for one thing. You won as a sub against Partick Thistle.
Yeah.
And that was the day that Bobby Murdoch scored Celtic's 7,000th goal.
Yeah.
Now, these days, that would be a great deal, but in the days, they always made a big thing about that.
Yeah.
And that was your first game.
Well, I remember that. I come on as a sub, come off the bench, and I don't know if it was 0-0 at the time. I think it was, I don't know if it's a frustrating...
It finished a draw anyway, it was one.
Did it?
Aye.
But in that incident, funnily enough, I come on and Big Joe just play up through the middle or whatever. And I remember when the ball came bouncing over, it was in the box. And I hadn't been on long. And there was a few of us that could have gone for that ball. It sort of ricocheted first and then it fell to Bobby, who scored the goal. And again, the players were all, they're very much aware about, you know, if whoever gets this goal, you know, they get into the history books, etc. But to be dead honest with you, I didn't want to score that goal. I'm glad Bobby Murder scored that goal, because I felt at that particular time, although I was hungry for success, I felt I didn't merit. I didn't feel as if I would merit scoring the sixth. Was it the sixth?
Seventh. Well, maybe.
I thought it was the sixth.
You might be right. It's one of the ones. Either the sixth or seventh.
But I just felt it made headlines and stuff if I did, but I really, honestly, that was the one time I didn't want to score it. And I'm glad that it fell to Bobby Murdoch, you know, because I got to know him well and stuff like that. And a man of his reputation should, it's apt that he got the credit for it and is remembered for it because he was such a brilliant Celtic player.
Mm-hmm. So the summer of 1973, you've arrived embedded in the 73-74 season, there would have been high hopes. And then early in that season, there was the Driver Cup tournament, and Jockstein changed the team about, and he had Brian McLaughlin on the right wing and you in the left wing. And there were some terrific performances, and people were saying, this might be the Celtic of the future. Obviously, Jockstein's bringing in all these new players and he's freshening things up all the time. And at that point, things were going well for you. So what happened after that?
At that point, what you're saying, that's right. I remember we played Dunfermline Dundee in the quarterfinals, then the semifinal, and then we get Hibs in the final.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we scored about 5-0, 6-0 against the two, Dundee and Dunfermline. And I was feeling great, playing well. Things were going great. We played Saturday, Wednesday, and then on the Saturday we played Hibs. And I didn't have that sharpness, because if you could imagine that the two games that I've just played there were the highest tempo games that I've ever played in, especially with Celtic. You run more than you'd ever run with any other team. And come this Saturday, I did all right, but I just didn't have that zip that I just had in the two other games.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, after that, we played, I think it was the following week, we played Arbroath in the League Cup at Celtic Park. In those days, they had the league section.
The home and away ties.
That's it. And then you would go into the league in between it, you know, that type of thing. So we played Arbroath again, I played, We won 2-0. I scored. I played fairly well. Mm. And then I'm waiting for the following Saturday where we kick off in the league. Now, when I went on the Friday to see if my name was on the sheet or whatever, it wasn't even on the in the pool.
Mm-hmm.
So I looked up and I went, I couldn't believe it, you know. And I remember, because all the players would go up after training Friday and have a look and see if their name's on it.
Mm.
And I remember I was wondering why it wasn't on. And then Bobby Murdoch, to his credit, he sort of just pulled me aside and he could see that I was a bit confused by it. And he just said to me, listen, he said, don't worry about that. He said, this is how Big Joke works. I says, but I thought, you know, he says, I know you've been doing great. He says, but he does this. Maybe he just does this and he'll not give you an explanation. He says, but just to let you know it's happened to all of us at different times, he'll just pull you out. And
do you think it was a wee test?
It possibly might have been. I'm not sure. Mm-hmm. But anyway, that was basically the last... well, from that moment on, it all went downhill. The not just the disappointment of it, but then the injury, the pelvic injury that I brought from Hearts to Celtic, just kicked in. I was training harder than I've ever trained, and I was aggravating it. And that was my main. That was the darkest time I've had ever in football, and apart from football, in that next sort of year,
18 months roughly.
It was like that. It was a nightmare, and it was all through, as we call it, a groin injury, but it was like a pelvic injury. It was all brought on because, as a young player at Hearts, I was getting this problem, which is normal for a boy that's 18 or 19, and you're usually rested, you know, but they asked me to play on, and they was giving me painkillers. So I'm taking the painkillers before the game, but not realising I'm doing myself a lot of harm. So when I came to Celtic, if you could imagine, I trained even harder, but I didn't realise making it worse. So although my name wasn't in the sheet that day, I mean, I started, you know, training even harder and harder, and then I was aggravating it, and then that just, we had a horrendous 18 months, you know. You've also got to understand, and again, nobody's fault, but the medical side of things was nearly non-existent. You know, it's just incredible, you know.
It's quite primitive in the days, wasn't it?
Oh, to say the least. To say the least. So a lot of the boys, when they get a knock, they would go to a private physiotherapist and put their hand in their pocket and pay for it, because we just didn't have the expertise at Celtic Park.
So that 18-month period was difficult, and then we come on to the latter stage of the 74-75 season, and Celtic's 10 in a row bids beginning to hit the buffers, and it's clear that Jock Stein knew things because he's maybe looking to the future, and you had this is when you, for the first time, you began to get a wee run on the team.
That's when I come back in at the...
The end of 74-75 season. You scored twice against Aberdeen.
Oh, yeah, I come back in. Yeah, I come back in as playing up front. I played a few games there. I didn't really think I would end up playing there. A lot of that came about at that period when John Clark was in charge of the reserves. And then when I could play, when I was fit enough to play, I'd play in the reserves, and he was great. He just said to me, look, he said, I know you're having a hard time. He says, just play where you want to play. He says, just tell me if you want to play in the middle of the park, you want to play here, there. He says, you can play anywhere anyway. He says, try and get back to enjoying your football again. So he could tell I was under stress, and you know, because of this injury, could flare up any time. And he was really good that way. I played up front, as in, you know, maybe scored goals and stuff like that. And I think it was one time he suggested that I play left back, and that's when the Big Joke came in. And
well, fate's a funny thing, because within a matter of weeks, the Celtic qualified for the Scottish Cup final against Airdrie. And Jim Brogan got injured, and really wasn't another left back there, so it was quite a wee surprise at the time when you went in there, but it was a great opportunity for you to make your mark.
Well, it was, and you're right about fate, and it's just, you know, you just don't know how things are going to work out. And I remember I had a big bust up with Big Talk probably about a month or so before it, just frustration, I suppose, in both of our parts. And again, looking back, I'm wondering if he was trying to test me in some ways, you know. But I got to the stage where I wasn't really caring anymore. I just wanted to try and get rid of this and try and just play. And so again, after one of the reserve games, I played at left back. My name was up in the sheet. And a lot of boys are come over and kidding on with me, oh, you're back, that's you getting back in and stuff. And we're playing Dunfermline, I think it was, away. I think that was the game. And one of the two of the older players had said to me, they've not brought you in to be a sub. He says, you'll be playing. You know, we know how he works, you know. And sure enough, he named the team. He just said, as usual, he didn't have a lot to say before games. He didn't say much, but when he just came to me, he just said, keep it simple. Your job, first and foremost, is to defend. When you get the ball, go forward. You know what you're doing when you're going forward, and Big Billy will keep you right. That was it. Nothing else. Because a lot of times after that, a lot of fans have said, oh, you get coached into becoming a left back and all this, and you go, no. It's
pure chance.
It's just pure chance. And I think when you've played the game, you know, since you're a wee boy and stuff like that, he doesn't need to start telling me about a whole lot of things to do. It's simple. And he had a gift of, I suppose, of keeping things simple.
Well, but the 75 Cup final, he was definitely changing things, because Peter Latchford was in goals by that time. Ronnie Glavin had arrived and he was in the midfield. Pat McCluskey would have been playing at the back. And then you're at left back. So, what's your recollection on the day of the 75 Cup final?
It was a fabulous day. Good weather, huge crowd. I think it was a bigger crowd than expected. Airdrie, well, I've got to tell you, but after the Dunfermline game, that was only a few weeks previous to that. I think there was about another four or five games before the Cup final. So, I was getting picked for them, but I kept thinking, you know, Well, I got a chance of playing in this cup final. So I'm going for one game to the next, hoping and praying that I keep playing well and I don't get injured or anything like that. And when it became apparent, you know, I'll be playing in it, you know, you just go, well, one minute, you know, the clouds are over you, and then the next minute, this is what happens in football. It's just turmoil. You're up and down all the time. But I was ready for the game. I mean, I was. Airdrie were a strong team. They were a good team, and it was a great game. I just thought,
just for the record, Airdrie beat us a couple of months previously in the league, so they were quite hopeful on the day, because we'd stuttered a wee bit towards the end of the season when the 10 in a row thing began to fail, and Rangers won the league, and we went to Broomfield one day and Airdrie beat us, and people were a wee bit apprehensive on the day that. And Partick Thistle would still have been, the League Cup final would still have been fresh in some people's memories. Aye. So there was a wee bit of apprehension in there at the time.
But, well, I never thought about that. But we certainly, we got off to a great start. And a good story, you asked me about what I remember, Ron, about some of that Cup final. Paul Wilson sadly lost his mum about a week before it. So Big Joe said to him, look, you don't need to bother playing and stuff like that. But he said, no, I want to play and I want to dedicate it to my mum's memory, which was nice. And I think a few of us, including myself, we went to the funeral on the Friday before the Cup final. And sure, what a lovely story. Paul Wilson scores two great goals.
Say two crackers.
Unbelievable, you know. I was that pleased for him.
Two headies as well, which was unusual for Paul Wilson.
It was. And it was a good, I think we were 2-0 and then he scored just before half time, and that sort of brought us back to reality. We've got work to do still, you know. And then we ran out 3-1, and it was just the rest is history, you know, basically.
So would you guys have been aware that was Billy's last game? Did he announce it beforehand, or did he only find out after?
I think it was after. I think we found out after, because Yeah, I'm sure it was that. Because the next, it's quite funny as well, that game, and the Saturday night, we went back to, who was it, we went back to some hotel, and the sports scene were going to come live with the cameras.
Yeah.
And so they asked to talk to four players, I think it was Billy, somebody else, Harry Hood and myself, obviously with me, just first cup final, all that stuff. So we're sort of standing in the line, and there's people, you know, having a good time in the background and stuff like that, and the cameras coming and stuff like that. So Harry's just in front of me, and I say to Harry, what do you think he's going to ask, you know, that type of thing. And Harry was good, you know, he'd obviously more experience than I had. He just said, just say I'm delighted to be back, you know, just say I'm delighted to be in the team and to come back, being a cup final, blah blah blah, and that's it, keep it simple. I went, right, so I actually said it to the letter, what he told me to say, because I wasn't sure how to go about it, you know. And then sure enough, the next day and the next week, everybody was like, oh, you're really good in the telly. I said, aye, no bother to me.
It comes natural.
That's right. But that was the first medal. And then, of course, Big Billy, that was him retiring.
That was the last game.
Yeah.
So 75 was a bit of a watershed, because that summer, Jock had a car crash and Sean came in for the season. Billy had retired. Jinky had retired, Jim Brogan had retired, Stevie Murray got injured and ultimately had to retire as well. So there's a lot happening behind the scenes there. And how did Sean take to it? Do you think he found it difficult?
I would think he might have. I got on quite well with him, fortunately. But Sean, I think one or two of the maybe more senior players, maybe, let's just say, maybe weren't they pulling their weight as they should have. But he would get into them, though. You know, he didn't mess about. So it was difficult, I think, for him. And I think we, you know...
It was a bit of a wasted season looking back, because there was a lot of talented players there that should probably have done better. And I think with Steeno being there, definitely the performance level dropped slightly. But the good thing for your point of view is that you established yourself as a left back. That was the season that you really came at the fore. So of course Danny's in the right back position and you're at the left back position. And it amazes me these days in the modern age when they all talk about wing backs. I mean, you and Danny were doing that 40 years ago.
Yeah. Well, I think that's one of the reasons he put me at left back, because I was an attacking. You know, because of, you know, obviously being an outside left, I could go up and put in good crosses and what have you and link up. So in many ways, it was ideal for Celtic to have somebody that was left-footed and also attacking, and it was ideal for me to be a team like Celtic. So it was in that respect, it was a good fit. But obviously there was I think a lot of the players were wondering if Big Joe, in fact, would come back. He was very seriously injured.
I don't think people appreciate how close he was to to dying, really. You know,
yeah,
I mean,
really,
horrific.
Really, yeah. Thank you. So it was. I think there was a worry. It was a bit of a cloud, you know, wondering about what's going to happen.
And you're a left back by this time, and obviously you're playing against right wingers. So I'm trying to think of the wingers of the period. Tommy McLean would have been at Rangers. Alec Edwards would have been at Hibs. Gordon Strachan and Davy Proven would have been starting out in their careers. And was there any wingers that you found difficult, or were you quite?
I treated every one of them with respect, and by that, you know, you just try and not let them play. And I think I had an advantage being a winger when I started, you know, playing for so long as a winger. I knew what I didn't, you know, I didn't like to play against when I was a winger, and I would play the opposite to winger tight. I would try and get him, as he's getting the ball, I would try to come in to intercept it or to shut him down, to man mark really tight. Whereas the likes of Danny across in the right back position, he would let the winger, often he let his opposing winger turn. And I always felt I couldn't do that. I don't want to do that, because I'm letting him The choices are, he could go by me on the right, he could come inside, he could put the ball through my leg. You know, I didn't want to give the winger that option. So that's why I worked him tight. But these players that you've just mentioned were all good players, and it's, you know, it's just a personal battle you've got with them to try and...
Wee McLean, he was never going to beat you for pace, but he was a great crosser there, wasn't he?
Well, many times in the Old Firm games I was told that, you know, he's the man you've got to shut down. If you shut him down... Because he had the supply for the two big strikers.
That's
at
right.
Ibrox.
That was their tactics, isn't
it? It always was.
And it worked. It worked. To be fair.
So we used to, I would always try and shut him down. I think I did pretty well. And then often he would switch from right to left, and maybe if it was Davy Cooper or something like that, he would come over. So Danny would pick up him, and I would pick up the other guy. So they did that, but you knew you were doing well when a lot of times, you know, they would get subbed.
Aye,
and you felt, well, I've done my job.
You've won your personal battle.
It is personal battles. But I would say to you that Bobby Houston...
What, the Thistle player?
Yeah. He was one of my most difficult opponents. He was... you've got to remember, he's 6 feet two. People tend to forget that. And he was a good player. I felt as if he didn't really get the credits that he was due. He was good, he was strong, if he got the ball, he would take you on, and if you hit him hard, he comes back at you, you know. So I was I gave him a lot of respect.
Cause he was a good player at that point.
I knew that I've got my work cut out here with this fella, you know. Whereas with other fullbacks, with other wingers, you know, there comes a stage during the game you might go, they're no coming back, you know. I've got them, you know, that sort of thing. And of course, I played against Doyle a few times.
Do you know, that's the one I forgot to mention.
Yeah,
he was temperamental.
He was temperamental. So again, with him, I knew how to wind him up, and they just again, no let him play, and just give him a wee kick and stuff. But but those players, the other players that you mentioned, they're all good players if you let them play.
Definitely,
you know, but. On that subject you're talking about with Davy Proven, and Davy would concur to this, that I'd played against him when he was just coming up, you know, and I knew that he was a good player, and I shut him down and I didn't let him play much, you know, but I knew this boy, he's going to be a good player. And then it was a season where we could put out the cup by Kilmarnock,
the replay.
So I had to go in and get my appendix out, so I wasn't fit. Now, we didn't have a strong team. It was a hard season.
It was a poor season, wasn't it?
It was a terrible season, you know, everybody falling apart. But I remember in the cup game, it was a replay.
Doing it at Rugby Park.
That's it. And John Dowie...
was left back.
Yep, John Dowie wasn't a left back. John Dowie, if anything, was a midfield player. And I remember... I think it was Big Joke back at that time.
He was back.
Yeah, he was.
That was his last season.
He was. And he named John as left back, you know. I think he played one or two games while I was out, you know, with the appendix. And I was really fearful of... because I didn't think John was a strong left back. And I said to him before the game, I says, John, you need to shut this guy out, Davy Proven. I said, he's a good player. If you let him play, I said... he'll get by you and he'll be whipping the knee crosses and all that stuff. I said, you must shut him down. He's the danger man. I said, just tight everywhere with him, you know. And basically that was it, you know, get right stuck into him. But anyway, Davy had a field day.
Proven ran amok that night.
He ran amok. and he actually tells the story. Of course, he then became my teammate.
That's right.
And he tells the story. He says, we were in the dressing room, he says, and the Celtic team was read out to us. And he said, I went, yes. He says, because you weren't playing, because you knew that I would have given them, you know, preferential treatment.
Definitely,
But he got a boost from that. He says, I knew, he says, I was going to have that's it, this is my game tonight. And he did, and he just tore the defence to shreds.
That made me Davies, that's how he came to prominence.
Yeah.
It was not the back of that game.
Yeah.
So the 76-77 season, Big Jock came back, and Davy McParran took over as assistant manager. So what kind of things did he bring to the team?
I think he was frustrated. My memories of that is that I don't think that Big Jock was wanting Davy to be assistant manager, or you know, assistant manager.
Besides assistant.
And I don't think that decision was made by Big Joe. I'm quite sure of it.
The right that behind the scenes, something happened that somebody told me this that I genuinely can't remember who it is. That it might have, it was actually in Sean Fallon's book, Stephen Sullivan wrote, and it was to clip Big Jock's wings, that they brought McParland in, despite Big Jock.
Yeah. Well, that would be most probable at that time, because there's a lot of that stuff going on, and D.V. McParland come in. But
this was Desmond White.
That's it. That
making his presence.
That's right. But that didn't work out at all.
No.
He came in. He's a decent enough man, you know. But he was frustrated as well, because, you know, it was obvious there was two men there that, and they didn't want one didn't want the other to be.
Well, the first season was very successful, because the rumour at the time was that Steen was grooming McParland to take over from right, but which obviously never happened. But that 76-77 season fascinates me, because we didn't start it very well, and that Jock had the masterstroke of going out and getting Pat Stanton, and all of a sudden in a defence, I'm sure you'll agree that didn't have a great balance there. Stanton's experience overnight sorted everything out, and he, although he was the captain on the field, I think he was respected by the players, and because of the reputation that he had. And then just after that, he sent Joe Craig, and Joe was leading the line through the middle, which took a bit of weight off the leash. And then Ronnie Glavin came at the fore. He started scoring a lot of goals. So two players had been brought in there, but not only were they playing well, but they were getting more out of the others.
Well, certainly the Pats, what you're talking about, Pat Stanton, he came in and made a hell of a difference to us at the back. We had a decent team, but you know, I think any team that aspires to win championships and cups like that, you need to have a good defence. That's you know, you've got to be solid, especially in the middle of the defence, and they've got to link up with the goalkeeper. You must have that, and we didn't have that, because we'd win most of our games, but we were losing the occasional stupid goal. And when Pat came in, he came in and it really settled us fantastically. He played as an out and out sweeper, where before we'd maybe have two centre-halves in there, and they both are playing off each other, and there was nobody really designated as a sweeper. But when Pat came in, that's what he was, a sweeper. For example, if I was playing left-back and I went up the line and I put a cross in, and let's say the goalkeeper got a hold of it, I was expected to be back at the left-back position if the goalkeeper kicked the ball into that position. You know, so it was like, this is the way we had played up to then. But when Pat came in, we had a wee chat, and I says to him, see, when I do that, if there's a wing in it and I get the ball and I go down, I said, you want me to go? He says, no. He says, if you break, he said, and it's broke down, I'll come and take your player. He says, you don't need to bother about that. He says, if you go, or if Danny goes, I go in and I'll fill in until you get back. So he was terrific. He just settled the whole defence, and that was a big reason that we went on to play really good football.
So that season, it's gone. I think we could have won it. We should have won the treble that season. We played Aberdeen in the League Cup final, and I think what done is that day was Pat was cup tied and Joe Craig was cup tied, so it sort of Jock had to alter the team a wee bit. The guys he brought in were good players, but you know, when you've got a settled team and you make two changes, but the irony is, we didn't play badly on the day, but we could have won that 6-2 that day.
Oh, listen, but what I do remember, I didn't actually know that the two players weren't playing. There you go.
That's right.
But what I do remember, the second half of normal time, we pounded them. You know, I thought, once we get one here, you know, because we were playing good football. And then in the extra time, and I thought, it doesn't matter, because Aberdeen showed nothing in the 90 minutes. I said, it doesn't matter, we'll win this. And I do remember one time, I think it was Danny went through.
Just to keep her to beat.
Just to keep her. And he wasn't even near the goal. He didn't even hit it near the goal. He just, you know.
Typical Danny.
I was like, oh, no. But I still thought, we'll win the game. And then, of course, Arthur Graham goes up the right wing, whacks a ball across. Davy Robb come in as the substitute.
He came in the blind side.
And it hit off his knee and went into the goal.
That's right.
And to make it worse,
Ali McLeod was the manager, mm-hmm, and he milked it for everything.
Well, the next day on Scotsport, the Aberdeen team live going down Union Street on the double decker bus.
There you go.
And you're thinking, well, that's a bit over the top. It's the League Cup, you know. I mean, that team, the bulk of that team, and only won a European Cup, Winners' Cup, to which they're entitled to an open top bus.
Yeah.
But you know, the League Cup was a bit sort of. Yeah. That was a bit, you know.
Well, Ali McLeod, you know, he milked it, you know, and I dare say. You know, I got him maybe the Scotland job or something.
But we moved on for there, and there was a real surprise in the new year when Jock signed Alfie Conn.
Yeah.
So even the players must have been shocked at that one.
Yeah, we'd never seen it coming, but you know, you just accept it, because Big Jock's, you know, there's a man that very seldom makes the wrong decision, and you know that he's obviously seen something in him.
Conn was a good player, so he was.
Yeah, he was a good player, and he was a good lad. He fitted in very well. He was skillful. He had injury problems.
And I was ashamed.
You know, he was. You knew he couldn't play the whole season. You know,
he was riddled at one point.
Ankles, knees, you know, and stuff like
that. He took a fair amount of abuse as well.
He did, because he held the ball and he gave you a chance to get in and have a piece of him. You know, but he played his part that season, definitely.
So towards the end of that season, I recall going to Fir Park one night, and we needed a point to win the league, and we were 1-0 down with a couple of minutes to go, and you were really unlucky, and it was 2 on goals, and that, you know, people look at that statistically, and Muller were winning 3-0. They had 3 shots on goal that night. In fact, it wasn't even 3 shots at goal. It was just one of the nights again that there wasn't for us. But you must have been choked for that. That's not a great experience, is it?
No, it wasn't. It was. It was a bad moment in football for me, and yet after a Big Joke, amazingly, he said, "I knew we wouldn't win the league here tonight." I don't know. He did. He said that, but give you a wee bit, maybe the insight that you've not thought about. Roy Baines, I think that might have been his debut that night, but he was the goalkeeper.
That's right.
I can't remember if he actually played in the first team before it, but I don't think he played much after it. He came in. I don't know if Big Peter was injured or not, but Roy Baines was a goal. For the first own goal that I was credited with, Joe Wark, the Motherwell left back, came over the halfway line, way out, and he hit this big, long, hopeful ball into the penalty box. And I'm running back to defend it, or going back with a Motherwell player. You know, I've always got a hold of the Motherwell player, and we're both getting into the box, and as the ball is still, it was a big high cross, and as the ball is still coming in, I had to turn and face the ball now, and then my choice is, now the ball itself is a goalkeeper's ball. We all knew that, but Roy never shouted, right? So if your goalie doesn't shout, by this time he's no shouting, I'm thinking, I need to get this. So myself and the Motherwell player are both going for it, and I'm still, and because Roy has not given me the shout, keeper's ball, I've decided I won it, and I knocked it back to where I think Roy would be in the goal line. And to my horror, as I've knocked the ball back to him, he's not there. And I turn around and he's standing behind me, you know, about 6 inches away. I went, oh, jeez, what did you not shout for? And he's got, you know, but the fans don't see that. They see me knocking the ball into the net. So that was the first own goal. The second own goal, correct me if I'm wrong, free kick. We have a line-up, and I'm to the left of it with a Motherwell player or something. Vic Davison, I think it was, took, who was playing with Motherwell, it was him, took the free kick. It was about the 20 yards out, smashed the free kick, going nowhere near the goal, hits my knee, and ricochets into the goal. For this,
there's not much you can do about that, is
well, there's not much I can do about that, right? And then, lo and behold, with a couple of minutes to go, we know we're beat at this stage, with a couple of minutes to go, somebody breaks down the Motherwell left wing, crosses a dangerous ball going into the 6-yard box. I run for it, and I use my right foot and manage to clear it, and I could hear all the fans behind the goal going, Oh, because I could easily have skived it into the net, you know. It could have been. Yeah. So anyway, I was like, I was pretty, I can laugh about it now, but I was pretty distraught about it. And then we're coming off, and I says, oh, God, the big man will pull shreds off me here for this. So we come in the dressing room, sat down, not a word said. And he turned around and he said to Roy Baines, all he said was, he went, did you shout? And Roy Bean went, no. And he went, I thought so.
Yeah.
And then we still silence. And my nickname was Kipper, right?
Mm-hmm. Where did that come from?
Big Joe. He gave me it.
Well, Kipper, what was it?
Well, I think it was a jockey, Kipper Lynch.
Oh, right.
You know? So, and then the next thing Big Joe says, for a moment there, Kipper, I thought you were going to get a hat trick. Dead serious he was, you know? And I went, and we're all like, oh. You know, and he just went, forget it.
Let it go.
That's it. So the next day, I was getting all the headlines everywhere. I'd never had more headlines in my life, ironically, by scoring two own goals. I was getting credited with two own goals. And they, as a wee footnote to that, that was a Wednesday, I think it was. We were going to Easter Road on the Saturday.
That's right.
And we knew it was, they had a good team, you know. We knew we needed to win it. And they, I remember, so you trying to get out your system the Thursday, Friday, you know, a new game coming up this Saturday, got to think positive, all that stuff. But I was still a bit nervous about it, you know. I was trying to get it out of my head, but of course it was the news for days and days, you know. And I'm thinking, oh, God, what if, I'm putting some doubts in my mind, what if something like that happens or stuff like that. So we arrived at Easter Road, we got a police escort for the roundabout, you know, the Maybury roundabout, I think.
As you do, aye.
It was mobbed, sold out, and we arrived at the ground about 45 minutes to go, and we went out just to check studs and stuff like that, the grass. And there was a lot of Celtic fans in already, and they started chanting my name. And I was like, I don't know, something come over me. I just get renewed energy.
Mm.
I just, and positivity.
Mm-hmm.
And I went, that'll do me.
Mm-hmm.
And it just, shivers come over, and I just went, we're going to win. I'm going to have a good
game. The galling thing about that, I don't know if you recall this, Tom Hart banned the cameras that day, so we couldn't even enjoy the game. The TV cameras wanted to show it, and he made a stand against, he thought it was too many games in television. But you wonder why he would wait to the end of April in a season. And it was obviously just being spiteful because Celtic could have won the league. And and there's always been a rumour that he was still raging at Pat Stanton going to Celtic.
Oh, that's ridiculous.
And there was a wee bit of spite there. And I often wonder if because Pat was going to win the league on Hibs turf. And in fact, Pat Stanton has said in public that his ex-teammates sent him telegrams congratulating him because they were proud of what he'd achieved.
Aye.
But we never got to. We were denied the.
I didn't know that.
We were denied the joy. You know, normally when you win a league, it gets televised. Yeah. You get interviews after the game and all that, and his heart gets slated.
Yeah, I didn't know that.
So,
but it turned out well. But I've got to say that the fans just—it was just remarkable for me, and it gave me a lot of confidence. And I played well. It was a topsy-turvy game.
Close game.
It really was.
One goal, but it was always going to decide it.
And I was glad to, you know, as I say, I think I played well. I headed one off the line at 0-0, and I made the pass, I think, to Kenny, who set up Joe Craig for the goal.
For the goal.
So, you know, only a few days later, you're down, and within 3 days, you've won the championship. And when I used to coach in the States and Australia and all that stuff, young people coming through, you know, they're listening to what you... I tell that story.
Mm-hmm.
I say to them, in the space of 3 days, I say, you can be so down, and then you can have that euphoria with other days. I says, what you've got to try and work at is to keep in the guidelines, and don't let yourself get too down about it.
Mm-hmm.
And subsequently, if you do win things, don't get carried away. Because you'll get your day again, you know.
Well,
so
things were even better for you then, because a few weeks later we were in the cup final.
Yeah,
and I recall that cup final quite vividly, and I can still remember the shock run about is when Celtic get the penalty and you took the penalty.
Yeah.
Now I've always wanted to ask you this: was that set in the dressing room that you were to get the penalties?
Yeah. Well, Millman was shocked as well. He was at the game. He couldn't believe it when he heard there was a... No, very briefly, what happened?
But Ronnie was a penalty taker and he was injured. So that,
yeah,
that
but
was
Kenny, Kenny had taken and the last
Kenny
one.
Kenny had he was like the vice penalty taker, if you like.
Aye.
So we were all expecting him to come forward as a captain as well.
Well, what happened there? We're at Seamill Friday before the game, finished our training, had a penalty kick competition, first time and last time we ever did it.
Mm.
So the goalkeepers would go in the goals. And you'd play, as soon as you missed a penalty, you'd go into the, for a bath.
Mm-hmm.
So I won the competition with all the boys. Eh?
Yeah.
So we goes in, gets changed, meets for dinner, and Big Joke's sitting at the door as the players are coming down and Kenny and I are passing, and he says, right, well, that's Skipper Gaffer, he's on the penalties, he won it. I says, oh, wait a minute, that was only a competition, you know. Mm-hmm. So we're just talking as you do.
Mm-hmm.
And Big Joke listen to his, and then he says, look, you two, he says, I wish it was me. And we sort of stopped and listened to what he said. He just said, you're good on there. He says, a cup final. He says, I wish I had the honour of a Celtic player to be able to take the penalty kick. And not only that, it's a cup final against our greatest rivals. So that was all he said. Mm. And then we went in and... I started thinking about, you know, what he was talking about. Mm-hmm. And stuff like that. So, so we left it at that, and then we got up in the morning for our pre-match, getting our pre-match thing, and I said to Kenny, listen, so there's no mix-up, I'll take the penalties. I said, he went, oh, all right. So he was a bit surprised that I said that, but he just went, well, you know, let's see what happens. I says, no. I says, let's no have any indecision.
Uh-huh.
Let's know. I says, I'll tell you if there's a penalty, there'll probably no be one.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I says, but I'll take it. That's fine. Story ended. And he was like, well, all right, let's see. And they left it like that and we went away. And then, lo and behold, when he blew,
mm-hmm,
mm-hmm. I knew.
Was there any discussion when the penalty got awarded?
Did
you just grab the ball?
No, I didn't grab it. No. I went up and Kenny looked at me and he's going,
you all right?
You, and I, you know, he was like, because he would have taken it. I mean, he's you know how many would have taken it.
Mm-hmm.
But I says, no, fine, I'll take it. But it was long, I couldn't get the ball, you know. Mm. It was, they were arguing.
Well, they went, because to this day, Big Johnson claims that was never a penalty.
Oh,
he was on the goal line, and see, to be fair, you can't categorically tell either way, because it wasn't a great angle that the ball comes to him. And it certainly, in my eyes, it looks as if it did happen.
Yeah.
Whether he meant it or not is open to debate, but the thing is, it was a penalty. So.
Aye. And the Rangers players were getting top of Valentine, the referee, and they were going on.
Aye, they had a hard time.
And another wee thing that sparked it all for me. So I'm waiting at the edge of the box for the ball. So eventually, when Valentine gets the Rangers players out of the way, Stuart Kennedy's got the ball.
Mm-hmm.
And he's got it in his hands and he's standing just off the goal line. So by this time the players are all clearing. And he just looked at me and he shrugged his shoulders to me in defeat. And he rolled the ball to me. And I thought, no danger.
Mm-hmm.
I just knew I was going to score. What he should have done was throw the ball away and get me to go after.
Aye, try and phase you.
Of course he should have. Uh-huh. But the fact he helped me, the way he rolled that ball, and I just went, this was just going to be behind.
I don't know if you recall it, you nearly scored just before the penalty, because the corner kick came in, Big Kennedy went to punch it away, and then he fell down, and as it landed at the edge of the area, you sent a looping header just under the crossbar.
That's right.
And one of the Rangers defenders actually did, that's what it is, he jumped back in the line and punched it away, but he rattled the hand into the big square posts.
Uh-huh.
It must have been a sore one, and he was injured, and that's why there was a certain delay as well.
That's right,
the fact that,
for the corner.
Aye, for the corner, and then the penalty. No, so all this is happening, but that was... So you're saying that your dad was surprised that you took it as
I remember him telling me he was up at the stand and watching the game, and somebody says, it's Lynch who's taking the penalty. He went, oh my God, you know, because I'd never discussed it with him, you know. So he turned away. He said he couldn't bear
watch it. So that was you, the hero, for the 2-1 goals against Motherwell.
Aye.
You know, you were, and you know, I spoke to Joe Miller, we did a podcast with him, and he says that there's not many Celtic players scored a winner in an all-firm cup final. So there's the likes of you and Joe and George McCluskey, and there's not a great list of players. Uh-huh. So that's something to be proud of.
Oh, definitely. I mean, everywhere I go, you wouldn't believe all the corners of the earth that people will. When I left Celtic over to America and going to play all these different places, it's Andy Lynch Celtic Football Club.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not just Andy Lynch. It goes with you. It's amazing throughout the world, Celtic Football Club, how well it's respected.
Mm-hmm.
And it makes me very proud. I was, you know, I get recognised with the connection of Celtic Football Club.
Mm-hmm.
So that season ended up well for us, you know.
So that in that summer, Celtic went to the Far East to play games in Singapore and Australia.
Yeah,
and they're playing a good standard of team. I mean, Red Star, Belgrade, and Arsenal was top quality stuff. Do you have any memories of that period?
I do. I have quite a lot of memories of that. We finished. And the surgeon, Mr. Abrami, was the club surgeon.
Mm.
And he used to begin me cortisone injections through my groin area into my hip.
Mm.
And I used to have to get these, right, to let me play. Mm-hmm. You know, that type of thing. This was all before I managed to be introduced to acupuncture.
Which saved me,
you know. So, anyway, we're ready to go to Australia, or we're going, and he said, I would like to try something with you now that the season's finished. It seems ridiculous. So he would take a scalpel, you know, he wanted to give me more flexibility around about my hips, right?
Mm.
So if you imagine you open your legs and you're trying to get them as wide as you can, you want to try and get a wee bit further, that would probably help, you know, having pain in your groin and stuff. So anyway, he basically took the scalpel. I got a local anaesthetic and he took the scalpel, and the two bits right up, the two adjoining bits, he would cut into them and then keep my legs wide so that hopefully he can get me a bit more flexibility, which just sounds crazy.
Sounds painful, apart from anything else.
Well, it was. So he's saying to me, if I can do this and you don't bother doing any training, he said, because it's a close season, and then maybe that might help. So it was a real, this is a shot in the dark, I can tell you. So you're talking about the Partick Thistle assistant that came over.
David McParland.
So David goes, so we're getting, you know, we're getting the big joke, says to me, what's your fitness, what's the story with you? I says, well, I told him what the doctor says, and he says, he wants me to leave it and stuff. He says, well, you want to go? This is him. Do you want to go to your son? I went, no, I wouldn't mind, you know. But I think he said maybe a couple of weeks I should be all right. He was like, right, okay, I think he wanted me to go anyway, you know. So anyway, before we go, Davey's pushing me. You need to do a bit of running, because he's got other players that didn't figure much in the season. He's got them out on the track and working them. And I said, Davey, I've been told by the doctor just to go easy with us. Just leave it now. Aye, but just do a wee bit, he said, you know, so I'm doing a wee bit of jogging and stuff. He says, you don't need to do too much. So after a few days, again, he had this thing where he thinks I've got to push it a wee bit, and I did. And I sort of ruptured the two areas where the scalpel went in. I felt like going after it. I went, what did I listen to you for? I know better, you know.
Well, medical advice should come first.
Well, that's right, but as I'm saying to you, there was actually no medical advice there. It was very limited, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then, what does Davey know about it? He's just he's the only one to see me getting, you know, doing a bit of run. And I made it worse.
Mm.
So much so. But anyway, went to Australia, and I remember getting treatment for the Arsenal doctor. Because they had a good team.
They did a good team.
He was looking at it and stuff like that. He says, all right, he says, I wouldn't aggravate that. He says, I would leave it. So that was my trip, basically. But I remember certainly the games and stuff like that. We went to Singapore. We played Red Star Belgrade.
Mm.
And they thumped us something like 5-1 or 6-1 or something. Mm. We've never been beaten like that.
Mm.
I certainly haven't. We scored like that. And I was like, what about this? You know, they counter-attacked. So they let us play our natural game, sucked us in, and hit us in a counter attack and killed us. And so, you know, to be, I've got to put my hand up and say these games were, you know, they were real physical, and it wasn't as if we were going over there for a wee jolly and stuff like that. It was full on, because there was also prize money as well. So,
well, we beat Arsenal twice as well, which is always an achievement, beating one of the,
that's right,
the major English teams.
That's right. They had good players, but we played well against them. And then we went to Australia, and then I think it was Melbourne again. We played Red Star Belgrade, and Big Joke changed the tactics. And I swear to you, if you'd said to me, "Do you think you'll ever be able to beat Red Star?" I've said, "Do you know what? We'll never beat. They're so far ahead." But in this game, he changed it. You know, about the counter attack and stuff like that. So we drew with him. I think we drew him that game.
It was three games. And then the decider, a final, if you like.
Then the final. I'm forgetting what the score even was in the final. But again,
we won 2-0.
But again, who won 2-0?
We did.
That's right. So again, the manager changed it even further. So much so that when the referee blew for the starting whistle, nobody moved. Because it was a cat and mouse. And it was a real physical game, I remember, as well. But such is the greatness of Joe Steen. I mean, just
tactically,
he just seen that so quickly and made alterations and changed it round. And we're drawing with him the second game and then beating him the third.
Well, the sad thing about that tournament was Kenny did not travel, and that started the rumours. And within a matter of a couple of weeks, I don't think he's were long back after playing, and he'd signed for Liverpool. So that was a big shock at the time. But were you aware, as a teammate at that time, that he might have been leaving, or was it a shock?
No, we knew. We sort of knew that there was something on it, and I do believe that Big Jock had said to him, "Look, you know, come out with us, and you can think it over." But he decided no.
He stuck to his guns.
Fair enough. Good for him. But I think there was not just Liverpool. I think there was maybe one of their top teams, maybe even Man U, something like that, that we go to that, you know. But that was probably the first strike, if you like, against us for that oncoming season.
And it wasn't the last one, because you know, Stanton basically had to retire after the injury. Alfie Conn was out for a long time. Danny got that injury, it kept him out for 18 months.
Yeah.
And the season was, I mean, you yourself, your appendix went into
appendix,
amongst other things. Yeah. I mean, I don't think there was any, didn't he get an injury that season?
No.
It was a horrible season.
Horrific. It was terrible. I thought we were really ready to
And meet. You became vice captain
at
the time, because Danny was injured. You became captain in your own right. So, so towards the end, but were you aware of the fact that Jock would be moving on?
We got all the rumours and stuff like that, and you could feel that there was tension, you know. But even when it happened, it was still disbelief, you know. This, the man that's done so much for Celtic Football Club, and you just it's hard to believe that. And then, of course, we hear all the other stuff second hand. He was offered this or he was offered that, you just think, you know. But
maybe it was better making a clean break, because he wouldn't have wanted to be in a bit part. It wouldn't have been right. So he moves out and Billy moves in. Now, Billy's your ex-teammate, your captain, and a new manager. Although you knew him at the time, would you have been feeling a wee bit apprehensive about, there's a new manager and I need to impress him?
No, not at all. I'd always had a good relationship with him. Albeit there's an age gap there, but even when I first went into Celtic, he made me very welcome and stuff like that. And I really liked him. I think Billy McNeil is a god. I really do. I just think all the things he's done, he's been fantastic for Celtic. So he was very up when he came for Aberdeen. He pulled me into the office, because I was captain at the time, and he's going, "Now look," he says, "we've got to get off to a good start." And he was really very vibrant and stuff like that. And he says, you need to get the players, make sure they know what to expect and all that. And, you know, I said, well, they're all over the moon. You're taking over and stuff like that. And he was terrific. It was what the club needed at the time, Billy McNeil, you know. And John Clarke was there. And a lot of times I feel that, you know, maybe he didn't get the credit and stuff like that. Same as he was a player.
That's right.
But John was great. John was great in the one-on-ones, you know. He would come up and he could say a wee thing about this and that, and he was spot on, you know. So the two of them complemented each other very well. And, you know, he gave us all the lift that we needed. And then, of course, you know, we had good young players coming through, and he went out and he bought good players. And the team was getting built again.
And yeah, I know we spoke about this in detail because I wrote the book about the 4-2 game. But you were a penalty kick taker at the time, and I always remember that there was that penalty against Dundee United with about three games to go, and United were, people forget about that season. They were right up there until at the very end, and if they'd have won that game, there's a good chance they might have won the league. And it was one each at a time that we'd get the penalty and a bobble off the spot.
That was probably my most nervous penalty, including the cup final, maybe, because I knew that as well. We needed to score this. We having draws were no good to us. We had to win every game. And of course, as you see there, we got the penalty. There was a very strong wind. I put the ball down in what was the penalty spot. But again, they painted the penalty spot in those days, so I had to be careful that I didn't put it down too much, or it was a stick. I went back, and I'm, you know, as I'm about to run up, I start my run, the ball blows off the spot, and it rolls away, I think, behind the goal. I had to go and get it, and I heard the crowd just going, fuck, I heard a pin drop. So I went back for it, got it in my hands, come back, put it down again, worried about no putting it too, but then it'll blow off again if I don't put it down hard. So I've got it down, go back, Dundee United players at the edge of the box, throwing bits, flicking bits of dirt onto the ball from where they are. Referee doesn't see it. There's no point in me going to the referee because this happens. They're shouting at me, trying to put me off, the whole bit. I'd done my usual homework quickly before it, you know, doing, saying, right, who's the goalie? Hamish McAlpin, right? He's left-handed, he's strong on that side. And I've taken one against him before, all that stuff, and I have to make decisions. But I could just feel the discipline beginning to just well up, you know. And I'm saying, and then with the wind being so strong, I've got to go over the ball here, you know. And so I ended up, I hit it really hard, you know, harder than I hit usually the rest of them. And he sees it, and he's up mid, you know, he's a very flexible goalkeeper. He's up, and he's got the hand, and it touches the hand. But I had it so hard, it hits the back of the net, and I was like, oof. And I knew, we all knew, that's it, we'll win this game. And the Dundee United players could have just walked off the park. They were deflated, you know. So it was a very important penalty.
So that lined us up for the 4-2 game, which is, you know, worthy of a podcast in itself, to be honest. But just briefly looking back that night, what were the main highlights?
Main highlights would be Doyle getting sent off. I remember being annoyed with myself in the first goal. Davy Cooper had come over to the right, and we were over at the corner flag, and I'm marking him, and I basically let him cross the ball. There was still a lot of work to happen in the penalty box, but I was annoyed that I never shut him down a wee bit quicker. That's just something that was in my mind. And Alec McDonald come in and get the goal from it. But it was still travelling, there was still a lot to do in the box, but I remember that. I remember him at 2-1, when he equalised at 2-each.
It's a horrible feeling, wasn't it?
Oh, it was a horrible feeling. I thought, how are we going to get back here? You know, 10 of Doyle sent off. And then I remember, of course, the third one, and I don't remember much about that, but the fourth, I'm making tracks with Murdo McLeod screaming in his ears to hold the ball because they had thrown everybody forward. And the logical thing would be just to hold it, till we come
kill
up.
Time.
To kill
time.
Aye, but even to come up. Mm-hmm. And he just needs to go to the goalkeeper and slip the ball to the side to me or mm-hmm. who, I think there's another player with mm-hmm. us. But he didn't, and of course there is. You know, he just, when he hit it, I was like, what are you doing? You know, mm-hmm. he shouldn't have done that. Mm-hmm. But of course it screamed into the top corner.
Well, that's just part of folklore now, isn't it?
Yeah.
That was wonderful.
Yeah.
So we're the champions at that point, and this is where things go a wee bit awry for you, because the next season you fell out of favour. Alan Sneddon became the right back, and Danny went to left back.
Yeah,
and I've often wondered, like, were you injured at that point, or was it?
Well, I think I had a couple of injuries, but I felt that Billy was wanting to bring through the younger players, uh-huh. which I would have said fair enough, you know. When I realised that maybe he's going to, you know, I played in some of the games, but mm-hmm. When I realised, I said to myself, if I'm not going to be regular, I'm off.
Mm-hmm.
Because I felt, I've done everything at Celtic now.
I know.
This is a
And club. At that stage of your career, you don't want to be playing.
Well, that's it. See, the other thing is, I know I'm not going to get a testimonial, and mm-hmm. I don't think I deserve one.
Mm-hmm.
I know that I was hoping to get a free transfer, but I didn't. I was very disappointed with that.
Mm-hmm.
But it was ready, you know, Pat, you've got to start saying, as hard as it is, you know, if I'm getting dropped at a few games and I'm not getting played, I'm definitely out of
mm-hmm.
here. And I'd also done my...
The reserve team at that time was very good as well.
Yeah, the order...
You were there, I think, I'm sure they won the cup that year. The likes of Bonner was in goals, Nicholas was up front, yeah. Jim Duffy was at Sweeper,
yeah.
Ollie McStay. I mean, there was a lot of good boys in that team.
Yeah, oh, they were. It was good. It was great to see them all coming through. And, you know, George McCluskey has come through with mm-hmm. Roy Aitken and Tommy Burns.
Just before it.
Yeah, mm-hmm. just before it. And so I just felt that. I'd also got my B licence, a coaching certificate. Mm-hmm. And I was the only Celtic player that went for it. The only other guy I believe that had that was Jim Craig.
Mm-hmm.
From the era before.
Yeah, yeah.
So I was looking to do the coaching and stuff like that. And so I didn't want to just play out there and be a reserve, you know.
I know.
That type of thing. I
actually looked it up, and you left when you were 29. And
yeah.
to be honest, I think we all thought you were older than that. You know, yeah. but I didn't appreciate you still have a fair amount of football on you.
Well, I know that. I think a lot of Celtic players left, you know, maybe even the era before me, left when they were very, still young, you know. My fitness was still good. It was just, you know, it was just one of the things. And then it didn't take as long for me. I talked to Billy and I said, right, you know, I want to try and get away now, you know. I wasn't going anywhere in Scotland. I knew that I wanted to go to America. I'd been there and I'd played again. When I was with Hearts, I'd played.
Mm-hmm.
We were out there about 6 weeks and we played against a lot of the teams out there.
Mm-hmm.
So I knew roughly what it would be like and I thought it was a good place to go. It was a great decision.
Well, there was a lot of British players in America at that point as well.
Yeah.
So
it was the right decision.
Mm-hmm.
It was, I had a great experience there.
And did the club play hardball in terms of the transfer fee?
Aye, that wasn't good. I mean, basically, I thought I would get a free transfer.
Mm.
Billy was under a bit of pressure at that time.
Mm.
And I think Desmond White was insisting
mm-hmm.
that they were looking for £20,000.
Mm.
And I was disappointed about that. And eventually, again, you know, so Billy was like, well, there's not much I can do about it and that type of thing. But the club were pretty miserable about that, you know, really.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't do well from when I left,
mm-hmm.
you know, financially, mm-hmm. that way, you know.
So where did you go to in America?
Philadelphia.
And I think you ended up in Canada at one point, didn't you?
Yep, I played a season in Philadelphia. The franchise was bought by Molson Breweries.
Mm.
They're the biggest breweries in Canada.
Mm-hmm.
So I went to Montreal. They took half the players up. The better half of players,
mm-hmm.
and then they bought players and brought them in. So I'm up in Montreal, played there a season, got on very well there. The general manager was looking for me to get into the coaching, give me the opportunities. I got hepatitis while I was up there, didn't know how I got it, but I got it, and that put me out of the game for about 5 months or something.
Simon was born in Canada, wasn't he?
That's right. And then after about 5 months, well, during that time when I was out, he wanted me to promote the football in Montreal and Quebec.
Mm-hmm.
So I did a lot of work there. But he was earmarking me to take over as head coach.
Mm-hmm.
And sure enough, the next season, I took over as head coach. Did very well. Got the guys higher than they've ever been. The season after that, they were proposing to turn the Montreal team into Team Canada. So what Molson had the sponsorship for this.
Mm-hmm.
So what they were doing, or the funds rather, they were going to bring all the best Canadian players to Montreal, and I was to be head coach of the Canadian national team, but it'd be called still Montreal.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So there was all sorts of good things happening there, and it was just a great time.
Mm-hmm.
It was terrific. But the league folded right out of the blue. The league folded, and that curtailed a lot of possibilities for me.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So there was another lunch came in the scene in the late 1990s, and if ever a boy was unfortunate, it must have been Simon, because when you see Henrik Larsson, John Hartson and Chris Sutton in front of you, then that must have been hard.
Yeah. No, you're right. It was just, as you say, when I talked to him about that, he just says, listen, Dad, he says, I'm very philosophical about it. He says, I got to do what thousands and thousands of Celtic supporters would love to do.
Mm.
I played for Celtic. He says, I scored a couple of goals. Mm. He says, so the fact it didn't last, okay, that's fine. He says, but, you know, he says, I would rather be positive about that. And he did comment on the fact that at that time, Martin O'Neill, Tommy Burns, first of all, he was sort of assistant with Kenny.
Yeah, yeah, for a short period.
And they gave Simon his debut.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And Tommy was trying to bring through and push the young players to get into that first team.
Mm.
But when Martin O'Neill came, that wasn't going to happen. And he had a whole lot, you know, he was given a lot of money and he spent a lot of money. And he did reasonably well. But I went to see him at the time. Simon didn't have an agent. I went to see him just to see, you know, what you want to do. And he says, well, we're going to offer him another contract. He says, but, he says, you'll not be figuring. He says, I'm not wanting the young players. He says, I won't be playing young players in this team for the sake of it. He says, I've got to win. He says, I want to win things. And of course, he's got the money.
Mm.
And he's splashing out a lot of money.
£6 million players we were buying.
Exactly. And then, so basically, and of course, he had Henrik Larsson.
Mm, yeah.
So basically, he spelt it out. Mm. And I said to Simon, well, it's up to you. You do what you want. If you want to, maybe you should maybe, if that man's telling you that, you maybe have to look elsewhere.
Mm.
You know, and he picked the wrong team and gone down to Preston. That was a bad move. But he's got no regrets. He loved it during his time at Celtic. I was so proud. I couldn't believe it. I thought I was daydreaming when I went to see him. I didn't even know he was playing that day. I was just going along to the game. I thought he might be in the pool, or he was in the pool. And then when I seen the warm-up, they're doing the warm-ups, I'm like, oh, he's...
That's a Dundee United game.
Aye.
Aye, but he scored that day as well.
Aye, he scored and they get the man of the match.
Mm-hmm, that's right.
And then I went, well, he's going to be playing here, you know. Mm-hmm. And then it was just wonderful for him. And then he had to wait a long time. I think it was the end of the season. He went to Tynecastle, and there was a lot of pressure on him there because he hadn't played, you know, or he wasn't picked.
Mm.
But he...
About a 4-0 game?
I think it was about 4.
He scored 2 and Sean scored 2.
That's correct.
Then it was a fight for the penalty.
That's right.
Hmm.
That's it. So, again, he did really well that day because I know that he must have been under a lot of pressure after he doing so well in his debut and then no getting playing and having a whole season. And then he's pulled back in at Tynecastle. That's a hard one.
Mm-hmm.
But he'd done great. You know, he's 2 goals.
Mm-hmm.
But so he's no regrets. He loved his time there, and you just move on.
Well, that brings us to the end then, Andy. I've really enjoyed that, and hope that you You enjoyed your meeting.
Yeah, it's been good talking about it. Yeah. You're bringing back a lot of things that I didn't even, I forgot all about, you know.
Well, all that it means is to say good luck for the future and whatever you take on.
Thanks very much.
Okay, thanks.
Bring me sunshine in your smile. Another great interview with a Celt from the past there, with St Anthony and Andy Lynch. Hope you enjoyed that. There'll be more podcasts along soon. I'm sure you're appreciating... No, I'm not sure you're appreciating. I hope you're appreciating the increased volume of podcasts. Got to keep up with those Johnny-come-latelys at the Sunday Scot at By the Men Celt. Anyway, we've got Celtic game on Sunday. Prior to that, we've got the Graves event that was mentioned earlier in the podcast. Also got the Zipwire, final few places, the golf, final few places, and then the Up Bend in Nevis. So more from us in the near future. And this is enough from me. That was him, St Anthony, with him, Andy Lynch, and this is me, Harry Beattie, saying good night. Good night.
In your smile, bring me laughter all the while. In this world where we live, there should be more happiness. So much joy you can give to each brand new bright tomorrow. Make me happy through the years. Never bring me any tears. Let your arms be as warm as the sun from up above. Bring me fun, bring me sunshine, bring me love, sweet love. Bring me fun, bring me sunshine, bring